Santon and beyond. Get ready for the Santon Times Hour.
With your host,
Alexander.
That's it. It's the start of another week. And welcome to the Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 FM. And as always, available as a podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify. My name's Alexander Leibner. This is Edition 70, Week 23. And can you believe it? It's June 2022. We're halfway through the year. Where's the year gone? You tell me. As always, if you want to get in touch with this particular show, you can email editor@santontimes.co.za. You can use social media and follow @SantonTimes or visit the website santontimes.co.za. And also don't forget to use the hashtag SantonTimesHour if you're posting anything on social media. It'd be good to hear from you. And talking about hearing from you, you can always send your questions or comments or inputs to any of those channels and be part of this conversation, man. You're part of the Santon Times Hour Nation, and I'm thrilled to have you join me. Thank you for making the time to listen. Wherever you are in the world, all is well in Santon land. And I know we've got listeners all over the world, all over South Africa, and of course, all over Greater Santon. Well, it's winter, and it's been oh so busy, surprisingly. Normally, when the weather and the winter months come in, it gets very quiet all over the place, but it has been quite busy. I've just gotten back from an extended weekend in Sun City, emceeing some big events for Forbes Africa and CNBC Africa, and it was good to be live on stage again and to get to interact with people again. It's been such a long time having done that. Gee, it was like, must be 3 years ago. Well, always great to pop over to Sun City as well for a boutique break, our island in the sun in the northwest. Things generally quietened down over winter in the emceeing, facilitation, speaking world over winter, and then they get super busy again towards the end of the year. I think it's end of year functions, it's strategy workshops, it's conferences, it's breakaways. So yeah, best I enjoy this time and this little break before things get crazy in the lead up to December. Well, coming up on this week's episode, we met some of the Miss South Africa 2022 top 30 finalists last week. And this week, I've got two more who will be sharing their story. Then I spoke to him during lockdown 2020 about his first book, and he's just released a second book about taking South African business ideas global. You won't want to miss this chat. I'll be sharing the last part of my Eastern Cape travel notes with you during this hour. And then one of Santon's most popular eateries is now in an airport lounge at OR Tambo. What a story this is. And finally, whilst COVID-19 lingers in the air, a business school just down the road from here has invested heavily into a breath of fresh air. All this and more coming up. There's no headlines to go this week. Got another jam-packed show we've got to get through. So let's get this thing going. Next up, we kick things off with our two Miss South Africa Top 30 hopefuls.
From Greater Santon to the rest of the world, this is the Santon Times Hour.
Right, kicking off the Santon Times Hour with our first interview, and it's two lovely ladies who are joining me. We've been talking about the Miss South Africa Top 30, and they are in the Top 30. And a lot of people saying, oh, why don't you interview all Top 30? And I'm going, it's impossible. Firstly, there's a lot of them that are traveling, believe it or not, and they're unreachable. And then there's just too many. I mean, we'd be here for an entire hour talking all things Miss South Africa. And there's also other things we have to get through. But I thought let's pick a couple of interesting bios, a couple of interesting faces, kind of get to know some of the Miss South Africas before we move on to the top 10. And you're going to have to vote for these ladies. You're going to have to decide who do you think out of the top 30 should make it to the top 10. And I'm thrilled to be joined by two more this week. It's Tamsin Jack, 25, from Somerset West in the Western Cape. She's an entrepreneur working with some of South Africa's leading startups and small businesses. She graduated with a food science degree from the University of Stellenbosch. She describes herself as compassionate, brave, and inquisitive, and she loves listening to podcasts. Nice one, Tamsin. While getting ready for the day, and it is her dream to meet women's rights activist and actress Emma Watson. And then I've also got Nompumelelo Mapolo. She's 26. She's from Diepkloof Zone 4 in Soweto, Gauteng. but she currently resides in Santon. Oh, geez, finally we've got some Santon representation on these chats. She's a real estate agent and founder and CEO of Conquerors Connect, a youth-owned waste management and recycling solutions company. If she could be a superhero, she would want to be Wonder Woman, because she's a woman of super strength and power and can fly. So there you have it, superpowers, superwoman, women who listen to podcasts and start working with startups. It's going to be an exciting chat. Let's kick it off, Tamsin, with you, because you are closest to me on our call. Tamsin, why did you decide to enter Miss South Africa this year?
So I've got a big passion for empowering young underprivileged women. When I was younger, I used to do a lot of work in the townships, and I just saw like life is a lot different there and the mindset is a lot different. And I've learned that a young woman only needs one person to fully believe in her and her potential, for her to be able to inspire or believe in herself and then go on and do all these amazing things. So I really believe that entrepreneurship is a way that we can get young women to become financially independent.
Okay, well, Nompa Malelo, you also in the entrepreneurial space, you're running your own, I mean, this sounds like quite an interesting business, waste management and recycling solutions. Do you sort of share similar sort of passion in terms of business and using this platform to kind of get other women empowered and going in business?
Absolutely. I definitely think Tamsin and I share the same sentiments. So I completely reiterate everything she's, you know, just said. But for me, my background started in corporate. So I've got a background in telecommunications with risk management, a blend of risk and business continuity. And I was there for 5 years and I thought, you know what, I don't want to be in corporate. So why don't I just start something and, you know, make my contribution in trying to rebuild this country and help other young women to absolutely empower themselves and become independent. And, you know, that's the core of my business. And currently I've employed three young, intelligent women. And yeah, I hope to expand that and empower more young ladies.
Well, I feel like I should be putting some backing behind you, considering you're staying in Santon. I feel like there's sort of some sort of like some sort of affiliation here now that we kind of almost have to kind of keep an eye on you in terms of how things are going to go. Nompa Malelo, staying with that point, was it scary moving out of a safe corporate job and going into a business, a startup business, something you've never done before? And what have you learned?
Absolutely. It was nerve-wracking. You know, it took me a year to actually do it. You know, you always consult with friends and family, is this the right thing to do? And everyone spoke against it, like, no, stay in your corporate job. It's only been 5 years. And I thought, you know what, I just need to make a jump. I'm still young. Let me try entrepreneurship and give it a good 3 to 4 years and make it work for myself. So it's been challenging, you know, not getting your salary at the end of the month, but I'm making it work. I really am.
Tamsin, just come back to you on your journey with Miss South Africa. What are you hoping to take out of this experience? Because I know a lot of people see Miss South Africa as just the pageant. You know, you get to get dressed up, you get to look fabulous, you get to be part of these things. But there's about 80% of the pageant that's really happening behind the scenes. What are some of the things you're hoping to take from this journey?
Yeah, Alex, so I actually don't view Miss South Africa as a beauty pageant at all. I see it as the biggest leadership platform for young women in our country. And it's a huge networking tool. I mean, through this, I get to meet women like Mpumi, and we're going to go through this journey together. And who knows what that friendship or that relationship might result in years down the line, because we have shared interests, and I see we're also working in the property space. So I'm really just here to use the leadership platform that Miss SA gives you.
You also mentioned in your bio, you're a big listener to podcasts, and I always like to think that people who listen to podcasts are not just trying to fill time or trying to fill space in their head. They actually listen to these podcasts because they want to learn, they want to empower themselves, they want to grow. What are some of your favorite podcasts that you listen to?
So my favorite one that I always revert back to, I always listen to them when I get ready in the morning, when we're busy putting on our makeup and my hair, because then at least it's not on. But I love Earn Her Happy. It's Lori Harder. is the host of that, and she also speaks about, you know, how she left her corporate job and speaking about entrepreneurship, and just, it's just ladies having a chat and inspiring and encouraging one another.
Okay, fantastic. Nompumelelo, you now reside in Sandton, and I have to ask the question, why did you decide to move to Sandton and nowhere else in the world?
At the time, my moving was around my work, so just being in Sandton was closer to South Sea, which is where I was working, and it's central to home, which is in the south as well, so it was just a central spot for me, yeah.
People have got a chance to vote for both of you now, and they can kind of get onto the Miss South Africa app. And let me pull up my notes here. So as far as I understand, you can download the Miss South Africa app and you get one free vote. So your first vote is free, and you can vote for any of the top 30, preferably one of our two interviews today, Tamsin and Nompumelelo. I'm sure they'll be more than welcoming your votes. And once you're on the app, I know a lot of it's happening very much digitally this year, they can cast their vote, and then we'll get to know the top 10 later on, the next couple of weeks. I think the date's June 13th, where we get to find out who the top 10 will be. As we wrap things up, what are you looking forward to on this journey as we carry on? Tamsin, what are you sort of focusing on if you make it into the top 10, and fingers crossed?
Yeah, so I'm just here to use all the attention that's on us as contestants now. I want to use that and channel that towards the things that I'm passionate about. So I'm working with a company called Who Business Class, and we're going to basically bring entrepreneurial workshops into underprivileged areas. So I want to give that as much screen time as possible. And then secondly, I'm very excited to meet the other contestants.
And Nompumelelo, I know that Miss South Africa at some point also has to take on some sort of charitable element as well. I mean, you almost have to champion a particular cause. Have you given some thought as to what that would be for you?
You know what? I think climate change is something that's really big, and people are not really informed on it. So, you know, I'm looking forward to having just conversations around climate change and how it affects us economically. That will be the main cause, I suppose.
Well, Tamsin Jack from the Western Cape, and then Nompumelelo Mampolo with 1 foot in Soweto and 1 foot in Sandton. I thank you for making the time to be on the Sandton Times Hour.
Online, on air,
anywhere, anytime.
This is the Sandton Times Hour. From Greater Sandton to the rest of the world, this is the Sandton Times Hour.
Well, time to talk books, and there's a great book that's come across my desk, and how I got this copy was I heard that Bruce Whitfield had brought out a new book, and we spoke to him in 2020 when he brought out his first book, The Upside of Down, and his publisher sent me an email and said, "Do you want a copy of the book, Genius?" And I thought, well, I'm all for compliments, and they will get you everywhere, so I thought, well, let's get Bruce Whitfield on the line. Bruce, good to chat to you again.
Thank you, Genius. It's lovely to see you.
Well, afterwards, I found out the book's actually called Genius, and I thought she was just being polite.
Oh, yes.
Yes, yeah. So tell us, Bruce, Genius, How to Take Smart Ideas Global. How did you come up with this one?
It's a follow-on to The Upside of Down, and the publishers contacted me before they contacted you and said, would you like to write another book? I said, yes, I would. Do you have any ideas? They said, no, that's your department. And I said, so how about talking to some of the smartest people in South Africa who've built some of the most globally competitive and compelling businesses in the country, but let's add a little bit of luster and texture to it, and then speak only to those who've gone global. And I started digging. I had five or six names off the top of my head, and I got to about 100. And as things go on, I realize I've probably missed another 100 more, which is brilliant because it means that there's a lot more work to do and a lot more stories to tell. But some extraordinary, extraordinary individuals that we have in South Africa have created remarkable businesses that employ other extraordinary individuals who've helped these brilliant ideas, these genius ideas, go global.
Well, I mean, you mentioned that there were over 100. And I mean, you know, when I first thought about it, there's the all-time classics like Nando's and Prattly Putty. And then those concrete blocks that we see when you go to the harbours that help, you know.
The Dolos,
yes. But then there must be a whole bunch of them that we don't even know about, that are very industry-specific, that are very niche. What were some of your favourite ones that you picked up on as you were researching for this book?
So Prattly Patty, everybody thinks they know the Prattly Patty story and they know part of the Prattly Patty story, but it's bigger and better than you think. Appetizer is a great invention from the year 1969 when an Italian immigrant called Lombardi comes to South Africa on his way to emigrate to Australia from the United Kingdom. He and his wife get off the ship in Cape Town, because that's how you traveled in those days, hired a car, and he was going to become a Karoo sheep farmer. And then his wife said, I don't fancy the dust and living in the Karoo. So I tell you what, why don't we go and stay in this nice place? It's called Elgin. It's got rolling hills. It reminds me of the south of England where I come from. And that's where I want to live. And so he said, yes, dear, like any obliging husband would. And had third grade apples. First and second grade sold at a good price. Third grade sold at a lousy price. So Edmund Lombardi then went and spent a huge amount of money. It was a bit of a laughing stock for a while in Elgin. He got the world's best scientists. He brought them in from Switzerland. He had his equipment made in the most expensive manufacturing plants in the world. And he overcapitalized dramatically, but he wanted perfection. And by 1969, was ready to launch that perfection in what is now known in more than 30 countries across the world as Appetizer, 100% owned today by the Coca-Cola company, but its roots very much at Applethwaite Farm in Elgin. And there's stories like that and legions of stories of South Africans in technology businesses, in the trademarking of the name Veldtskoon is a pure stroke of genius. For 1,000 years, people in this part of the world have worn Veldtskoon. Indigenous South Africans, long before settlers arrived, were making their own shoes out of raw animal hides and tying them together with sinews, and were originating this idea of the Veldtskoon, the Veldtschuh. British people, that's what the polite word is, call desert boots, until one day a South African guy sits down and goes, you know what nobody's ever done? Nobody's ever trademarked the name Veldtskoon. So I'm going to do that, says Nick Dreyer. And he sticks a coloured sole on the bottom of the shoe and he matches that with a brightly coloured lace. And the next thing, they're on the feet of our Olympians going off to the last Olympics. Prince Harry is wearing them. Ashton Kutcher is wearing them. And we've seen the profile of this raised dramatically. Matosa, La Duma at Matosa, is contacted by Eddie Murphy's people and is featured in Coming to America 2. And if you go to the waterfront in Cape Town, I went past there just recently, and there's the Matosa store, a physical store of great South African indigenous design coming from beadwork from 200-300 years ago, reinterpreted and put into knitwear, and charging the same sorts of prices, by the way, as the shops next door, which are all, you know, French and European imports. And so really making big waves across the world, some great South African innovations, innovators, and great stories. And that's not even mentioning the big ones, whether those be what we used to call auto in general in South Africa, whether it be Discovery, whether it be Dimension Data from the 1990s, just so many great South African innovations taking the world by storm.
Well, you know, it's just one of those books that maybe just puts things back into perspective again, because I think as South Africans, we're so overwhelmed by potholes and load shedding and corruption and incompetence, and it, you just can't see, you know, the forest for the trees when it comes to these things. And it's suddenly such a great read that just brings everything back into perspective and just shows us that we do punch above our weight and that we are still to some extent in many industries a global player. I mean, I know you also touched on, well, Murray and Roberts, you know, some of the construction work they used to do. I also saw you mentioned that we're one of the biggest exporters of cider in the world. Do you find that South Africans have completely lost the sort of an idea of where we fit in the global economy?
I think our national sense of pride and self-confidence has been bashed out of us for more than a decade, the Jacob Zuma decade. It cannot be overestimated and overstated how destructive and how damaging and how absolutely appalling it is, and the importance of holding people to account for that decade, but also the importance of saying sometimes allowing legal processes to do their thing, and as best we can to focus on what is good and what is positive and what is going to create opportunity and growth and into the future, and learning that we can't fix everything, and sometimes you just have to build. And so many of the billionaires and people who have created businesses over the decades, the one thing they have in common is this overarching sense of optimism that the future is better than the past, and they invest invest in that future. They do it emotionally, they do it with capital, and they do it with blood, sweat, and tears. And the great business builders, you talk to somebody like Robbie Brosen, the founder of Nando's, who is irrepressible in his love and the depth of his admiration for South Africans. He serves on the Constitution Hill Trust, and he took me up there the other day to Constitution Hill to explain to me what they're going to do and how they're going to reinvigorate a massive public space, which we should all celebrate and commemorate and go to constantly, not just because of worthy love of a constitution that kept us from the brink of disaster, but just as a place where South Africans can congregate with pride, looking over Joburg and just saying, what a great place we live in, what a great place has been built for us. And we dare not cock it up. We dare not mess this place up, because future generations will curse us forever if we do it. So what do we hold on to? We hold on to the innovators, the rebels, the renegades, the problem solvers. And the sooner we put the nasty, evil, bigoted, vile, repugnant, repulsive, revolting politicians, not everyone is like that, by the way. Some are quite nice and quite good at their jobs, but there are lots and far too many that are an abomination. We put them aside and just focus on what we can control, our locus of control, focus on building. Pete Bouton, who's the chief executive of PSG, said something to me a while back now, and he said, negative people never build anything. And I like nothing more than the all-encompassing, powerful, simple statement. Negative people never build anything. If you're so worried about tomorrow that you can't even begin to think about what it looks like, you don't build. You pull back, you hold back, you constrain yourself. And nobody, least of all you, benefits from having that sort of mindset.
Well, if you need a dose of positivity, if you need a little bit of inspiration from your fellow South Africans, genius, How to Take Smart Ideas Global by Bruce Whitfield, who is a best-selling
author.
It's
more than one idea, Alex. It's more than one idea. It's lots of ideas. And I'm so upset that I left half of them out. And the publishers cut out like 10 of them. Which was 10 of my favorites. So I'm really annoyed about that. But it'll come to you in a podcast soon. And hopefully in a second edition of the book, if enough people buy it, it'll be bigger, fatter, and heavier than the 404 grams it currently is.
Well, there you have it. From the best-selling author, sought-after business speaker, and broadcaster himself, Bruce Whitfield. Thank you so much for making the time to be on the Santon Times Hour. We're on the bottom of the hour, and we'll be back right after this.
The Santon Times Hour continues.
The Santon Times Hour on Mix 93.8 FM and Find My Way by Timo Odv, another one of those great South African discoveries. And when I say discoveries, when I first heard Timo Odv, I thought he was international. I honestly thought that this guy must be sitting somewhere in the Netherlands or one of the EDM capitals of the world. And then one day somebody says to me, oh no, this guy's from like down the road. He's like from Kempton Park or something. I think it's East Rand, yeah? And I was like, that's amazing. I was like, the sound is so international. And talking about great South African exports, I mean, this is just one of those. Timo Odv, always amazing. So taking us into the second half of the Santon Times Hour. And as always, if there's anything that caught your attention during the show, but you didn't manage to grab the details, be sure to visit our show notes on santontimes.co.za. For a detailed breakdown of just some of the times, pricing, people, places, all these things that we kind of talk about on the show. If you want more details, you can check it out on the website. Also, be sure to check out the social media accounts at Santon Times and feel free to share your thoughts, engage using the hashtag Santon Times Hour. Right, I've been talking about this road trip that I did down to the Eastern Cape over the last couple of Mondays, and well, I thought, let me wrap it all up with one final story from that trip. Having come from Zuurberg Mountain Pass, which I told you about, which became sort of a channel back in the days when we had the gold rush and the diamond rush, both in Kimberley and Johannesburg respectively, a lot of people came through that Port Elizabeth harbour, through the Eastern Cape, over the Zuurberg Mountain Pass to places like Graaffreinet, and then moved up into the Free State and then sort of went their respective ways depending on what they were looking for during that sort of rush for wealth and hopes and dreams. And I think people were already sort of blown away by the fact that we had such incredible weather coming from places like the UK. They must have thought, well, I'm already sold. I've got sunshine every day. So what more could I ask for? But in that Eastern Cape corner, and we're looking at like the Karoo, sort of parts of the Free State, sort of the Eastern Cape, where all of that comes together. You've got the Greater Karoo, and stayed at a place called Mount Kamdubu Private Game Reserve, which is a hop, skip, and a jump from Graaffreinet. So if you know where Graaffreinet is, Mount Kamdubu Private Game Reserve is not too far from there. And also just such an interesting game reserve. Like, you think you've been to one game reserve and you've seen it all, and then you go here and you think, okay, now this is a whole different story. So the story of Mount Kamdubu Private Game Reserve goes that this place used to be an actual town. Like a small town. Like, you know, these towns that you drive through on a road trip and it's got a post office, it's got a spa, it's got a police station, it's got a home affairs office, it's got, yeah, all these sort of things that sort of towns have, like a small church, etc., etc. So it was that kind of town called Petersburg. And then one day, Petersburg just sort of started fading away and became farmland, and Petersburg was bought over a few times over and split up, and eventually this little town was sort of just part of the scenery of a collection of different farms. And one day these farms were all sort of bought and put together, etc., and turned into a game reserve. And now what you find when you go to Mount Kamdubu Private Game Reserve is that you've got this, essentially what was an abandoned town is now been turned into a fantastic sort of game lodge experience. So the main lodge, or the main manor that you can stay in, and where also lunch and dinner and breakfast is served, and there's a swimming pool, and there's all different facilities, that used to be the police station. Many, many moons ago, when the place was still a town, they converted that entire police station that became a farmhouse that now has become a sort of a lodge manor, used to be the police station. And it's still got the wooden floors. It's all very sort of like, if you think about it, like sort of Karoo style, you know, back in the days, farmhouse kind of vibes. Really, really fantastic. I mean, the weather is unbelievable. You get, you know, some incredible heat waves out there. Very different lay of the land. But you've got this police station that you stay in. I mean, you wouldn't know if you didn't ask, but if you know now, you'll know when you go that used to be a police station. Then you've got the old home affairs office, which is now sort of a family unit. So if you're going with your family, you can book into there, and it's got, you know, extra rooms, and there's a kitchenette, and you can have someone cook there. The old post office is now a conferencing room, or a conferencing facility. And that's how it goes. And it's just the most fascinating thing when you start discovering this. And then you take a drive around the game reserve, and you start seeing sort of these old ruins, and there's also old farm graveyards that tell also a very interesting story. And then what's also fascinating about this particular property is that it was also one of those backdrops to a lot of the frontier wars. And there's some fantastical stories that a lot of the game rangers will be able to tell you of some of the battles and bandits and renegades that used to, you know, pass through this land, and between the British and the Boers, some of the fights that were fought there. And if you really got a bit of time, and maybe you have a bit of a sundowner drink, as a lot of people do when you go on a game drive, you know, you watch the sunset, you might stop off at one of these sites, and you actually might still find old belt buckles, old buttons, bits and pieces of those moments in history that went down on this particular property. And they've also got this really fantastic sort of almost like a medicine cabinet in the main manor house of Mount Kamdubu, where they've collected sort of old binoculars, glasses, you know, and you can sort of just dig through it and kind of just get a sense of some of the stuff. I mean, it's very rusty, very old, very worn. But if you're a bit of a history nut like myself, you might enjoy doing that. You might enjoy going through some of the books that they've got, where they actually tell the story of what happened here and how it all came together, and, you know, why it is the way it is, and really interesting pieces of history that we don't always get to learn about at school. You can really immerse yourself in the wildlife, and you can really immerse yourself in the history of the area. And what's really cool as well is that they've actually now developed these pods, and I didn't get a chance to stay in these pods, but I'm hoping we get to do this next time we pass through there. But they've got these like islands in the middle of the game reserve, in the middle of, I say the middle of nowhere, but obviously it's somewhere. But you're sitting on a cliff, or you're sitting in just a plane, and it's like a one-bedroom room, like a pod. That's what they call them. A little bit of a terrace, but you're in the middle of the game reserve. You're all alone. I think there's a bit of Wi-Fi. I'm not quite sure, but you've got the bare basics, still comfortable. to get through, and they bring you your food and they bring you whatever you need. But for the most of it, you're on your own and you're literally in the middle of nature, just the two or three or four of you or however you travel, and you can look out onto the stars. I mean, you might want to be, you know, a little bit cautious with the lions and everything being around, but if you're into that kind of immersive experience, well, you don't necessarily want to have dinner and lunch with everybody every single day and, you know, go on game drives with all the rest of the guests. But here you can now sort of just be on your own in nature. That is quite something, let me tell you. And then down the road, as I said, is Crafrenet. And in Crafrenet, I had a chance to stay at the Droste Hotel. And the Droste Hotel is once again a building that has huge historical significance, and I'm not going to go into the whole history of this particular building, but an important landmark. It used to be sort of an administrative building. I think, as far as I understand, the governor or the overseer of that particular part of the world many years ago were operated from there, because before they had this particular building, they had to go all the way to Stellenbosch. So if you wanted to get married or if somebody passed away or whatever, you had to go all the way to Stellenbosch to get your stamps and your signatures and all that kind of stuff. And that was quite a trip. I mean, by horseback or by cart, I mean, you were on your way for quite some time. And by the time you got back, you know, the world had changed pretty much. So they initially had to operate like that. And then they got whoever was in charge at the time to say, look, you know what, we need to have our own sort of administration building where we can do all of these things with a courthouse and a magistrate and all these things. So they built this building, and many years later, when it wasn't what it was initially, it turned into a hotel, and it was refurbished a couple of years back. But what an absolute gem in the middle of Crafrenet, and also in the middle of nowhere. And I don't say nowhere disrespectfully, because I mean, Crafrenet is somewhere, but you know, if you go 100 kilometers in one direction of Crafrenet or 100 kilometers in the other direction, you know, you're going through farmland, you're going through, you know, the hinterlands of South Africa, where it's just wild open spaces and mountains, etc. So you know, Crafrenet is this oasis in the Karoo. You've then got the Droste Hotel, which is another oasis within the oasis. They've got the most fantastic Africology spa there. And then they've got a wine cellar, a wine shop. There's an art gallery, fantastic conferencing areas. There's a library there as well. And when you eat there and you sit in the garden, you know, on the terrace, there's some fantastic art, and it almost feels like you're sitting in Franschhoek or Stellenbosch. It's like a slice of Stellenbosch in the middle of Crafrenet. And they have these beautiful sort of vineyard tunnels that they've built, and they've also got these rooms that have different colored doors, sort of yellow and pink and blue, and it gives it this whole very sort of villagey feel. But it's a massive property in the middle of Crafrenet. But needless to say, Crafrenet is also a fascinating place to explore. And I've really been there, I think, once or twice. But the last time that I was there now, this last couple of months ago, I really fell in love with Crafrenet. I thought, what a stellar place. And they've got some lovely restaurants that you can go out and explore if you feel like different things. I mean, if you feel like some real Karoo food, they've got a lovely restaurant that sort of serves that up. If you're looking for something more contemporary, sort of pizzas and salads and something like that, they've got also a fantastic restaurant that serves that up. You can go to some of the more natural experiences. They've got the Valley of Desolation that you can go up to. Then if you want to take a little bit of a drive outside of Crafrenet, you can go to New Bethesda, which has become a real hotspot for people in terms of tourism, but also a lot of people moving to New Bethesda. So it's, as somebody was telling me, the property prices in New Bethesda are almost as exciting as the ones in Crafrenet. So that is another thing that you can go see. And there's the famous Owl House, but there's also quite a few fossil discoveries that have happened there. So you might enjoy taking a drive there. But the Droste Hotel in Crafrenet, let me tell you, quite something to see. And if you're looking for sort of a halfway point between your next trip from Johannesburg to Gqeberha or Johannesburg Cape Town, that might be worth the little bit of extra push from Gariep Dam and getting all the way to Crafrenet and maybe making that a stopover point. And maybe not just for a night. You might want to stay for two or three nights and explore some of the fantastic things that we have in our very own backyard here in South Africa.
Thank you, Alex. I love your professionalism, and thank you for having me on.
You're listening to the Santon Times Hour. Connect with the Santon Times. Email editor@santontimes.co.za.
Well, staying with all things travel, and I've been quite fortunate through my career in media that I've done a lot of travel, but a lot of it's been business travel. When you do business travel, I don't know, you travel differently. I don't know how you feel if you travel a lot. But leisure travel and business travel, well, firstly, leisure travel mostly you probably do with a family member or you do with friends, etc. Whereas business travel, you're generally on your own. You might have a couple of colleagues, but you look for different things when you travel on business, and you need other things, and you need access to emails, and you need access to food right now because you don't have time to sort of wait in a restaurant and get things done. So you might find that a lot of business travelers gravitate towards using lounges. And when you talk about travel, you get lounge people, and then you get people who grab a coffee in the food court at the airport. Well, I was going through a bit of reading and came across this really fascinating story, and I got really excited about Olives and Plates now looking after one of the lounges at O.R. Tambo. And if you've been in and around Greater Sandton, if you're into dining like we are, we do a lot of dining, a lot of lifestyle, a lot of travel, you have been to Olives and Plates. You've been to Olives and Plates in Hyde Park Corner. I know you have, at Exclusive Books. There's a fantastic view, apart from a great menu. Then you will remember the Olives and Plates in the heart of Sandton as well, right opposite the Michelangelo on West Street. And I need to maybe briefly touch on that and find out what's happening there. But nonetheless, you know Olives and Plates. They've got the most insane Mediterranean menu. And not just from a flavor point of view, but from a visual point of view. And I thought, well, we need to have a chat to them because if they're at the airport, we need to know about it. So I'm thrilled to be joined by Andrea Neofitu. She's the co-owner of Olives and Plates, but moreover, she's the one who looks after all these fantastic dishes and comes up with them visually and from a flavor profile perspective. And then I've also got Nelissa Nene, who's a senior marketing manager at Standard Bank. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me on the Sandton Times Hour.
Thank you for having us.
Let's kick things off. Andrea, let's quickly touch on Olives and Plates. How long have you been going for? And what happened to your restaurant in West Street in Sandton? Are you still going?
So we've been going for about 30 years. It's a family-run business. It's two sisters, Litsa, my sister, and myself, and two husbands. We keep it tight. We're saying we're running out of family. Because the more stores we open, we don't have enough family to continue with this. But anyway, unfortunately, 140 West Street, we've had to give up. COVID taught us many things. It was taking away from my embassy store. I was sharing very much the same clientele. And I mean, the distance is a kilometer and a half. It didn't make sense. Unfortunately, we gave it up. We're still servicing the building, Hogan and Lovells, which is still the, you know, I can't say I've given it up and it's closed down. It still exists and it's there. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're still around. And I'm so glad you mentioned the embassy branch that you've got, because I actually was there for lunch not too long ago. And it was also just absolutely fantastic. But out of all of this, you've now birthed another exciting venture, which is at O.R. Tambo. Tell us a little bit more about this this venture that you've now gone to, which is totally different to what you've been doing so far.
And very unexpected. We didn't expect to kind of venture into the airport, even though it's been my greatest dream to go to the airport. I've done it all. We've done the institutions, which are all the universities. We've done hospitals. We've done corporate. We've done the restaurants in shopping centres. My last was the airport. I mean, where else do you go from here? It's the airport's my last destination, I think. And when we bid it to as one of the contractors to get to service the airport, I didn't think much. I didn't think I'd stand a chance. I was up against big boys. So I arrived there with just three of my little staff and myself. We did the best we possibly could. My other competitors were there with like at least 10 or 12, you know, chefs and groups of people. And I thought to myself, what are you doing? You are going to make the biggest fool of yourself. But anyway, I was there and I had to just pull it off and do the best I possibly could. Anyway, I put the food out and I think Standard Bank was received it very well. And a week later, we got the offer. And I can't tell you how overwhelmed I am. I can't tell you. And it's a beautiful little business to run.
Well, listen, I'm very excited for you. And I think it's such a David and Goliath story that you got in there as maybe sort of the most unassuming of all the contenders. And Nelissa, on the Standard Bank side, had you gone through a revamp of your offering at the lounges during COVID? And a lot of the lounges closed down over the last 2 years. They were sort of open, semi-open. They were offering sort of muffins and plastic packets. And it was all like not as glamorous as it normally is. Was this part of sort of a refresh for the brand's lounge at the airport?
We absolutely did, yes. We took the opportunity. I mean, just like all the other lounges, we had to close down in March 2020 with the lockdown. And we took the opportunity to actually just relook at the offering and see where we can actually improve. So we bring out now a more sophisticated lounge in its new look and feel. And of course, the olives and plates experience, culinary experience, I would say, which is a great opportunity for our customers and our clients to really just sit and enjoy a moment of serenity just before the hustle and bustle of the airport. Because, you know, you've said it yourself, when you're actually an avid traveler, you do need that moment to either go onto your laptop, connect with family quickly, etc. And that's what we wanted to give our customers and clients. Beyond that, it's just about, you know, how do we give the space in between the different areas to ensure that we are still observe the regulations of COVID, giving our customers the actual space that they need to be able to sit apart from each other. So that was a key ingredient in the renovation.
So the lounge is only accessible by Standard Bank clients. Do you have to be a specific level of Standard Bank client, or do you just have to have a credit card or a check card?
It's our relationship managed portfolios. So private banking, professional banking, signature, and wealth and investment banking clients. That's who has access to this environment. And also we find that these are the clients that actually travel a lot and really need this offering.
And is this on the domestic side, on the international side, and only air side?
Yes, it's on the domestic side. D8, I believe, next D8, gate D8, if I have my bearings correctly. So great. Definitely on the domestic side of things.
All right. So if anyone's flying to Durban, Gqeberha, Cape Town, you will be going through domestic and you will see this lounge and you best make use of it. Because, I mean, I think what's so exciting about it is that it's just one of those opportunities for South Africa to showcase some of the great stuff that we have and that we do. I mean, if you've traveled internationally, yeah, everyone's got a lounge. You can go to Dubai, you can go to London, whatever. And they all have their thing. And, you know, some of it is a little bit novelty and some of it's actually really good. But if you go through South African airport lounges, I mean, we really pull off a fantastic show. And I'm just so excited that this is just another one of those gems that we can sort of throw out there to international tourists who are expecting, I don't know what they're expecting when they go through domestic air travel in South Africa.
Some lions and elephants.
And a giraffe walking up and down the runways. Now, Andrea, tell us a little bit more about the food offering. I mean, it's obviously not going to be your usual sort of olives and plates, very fantastical dishes. It has to be a little bit more practical and Nelissa was saying, it has to be also COVID-19 compliant, etc., etc. So what can people expect at this lounge?
It was challenging for me in terms of the COVID-19 and trying to get the regulations in place. But, you know, my food offering is what it is. I can't make it simple. I can't make it diluted into quick service, takeaway, kind of fast food. No, that's not olives and plates. That's not who we are. So I had to really rethink it. And how can I put out a dish that is so fabulous that I can get out in the shortest period of time? And, you know, I always do believe that you can only cook as good as your produce. So yes, produce, sourcing the best produce and putting that on the plate at the quickest possible time. And that's the bottom line. And I think I've succeeded, because whoever has received a plate of food from the lounge has been totally overwhelmed. They need to know who the chef is. They need to know who's running this unit. They need to know. We were photographed. I have been photographed, which is not my best, but anyway, my chefs have to come out and they get photographed. And I must say it's been overwhelming. And when you get when you get feedback like that, you just realize just how wonderful and how amazing it is to give somebody an instant gratification. Because my passion is to satisfy somebody and give somebody a pleasure. I want to service you to the best of my ability. It's not about money. It's never, ever, my business was never based on money. The money just came along. It's all about being absolutely passionate to my client. I want my client to walk out and say, wow, that was amazing. Then I know I've succeeded. That's all that counts.
Well, it looks like it's a power move from Standard Bank side to team up with you and to bring this offering to the airport environment. And I'd like to thank you, Andrea Niafitu, co-owner of Olives and Plates. And if you are traveling through OR Tambo anytime soon, make sure you get there a little bit earlier, because then you can maybe enjoy some of that that fantastic menu. And then Elisa Nene, Senior Marketing Manager at Standard Bank, thank you so much for making the time to chat to us on the Santon Times Hour.
Follow the Santon Times on social media.
At Santon Times.
All right, as we come to the top of the hour, we are fortunate to squeeze in one more interview. And full disclosure at this point, it is with the Dean and Director of Henley Business School Africa, and it's Jonathan Foster Pedley. And I am doing my MBA through Henley Business School, which is a whole other conversation. I mean, we'll need hours to get through all of that, because, you know, an MBA, I mean, the commitments are just on another level. And I think I've mentioned it previously on some shows that, you know, you don't quite know what you've signed up for until you've signed up and you're actually, you know, on the bus and you're going. But Jonathan, it's good to chat to you again. It's been some time since we last spoke.
It has. And you started the MBA. We've entered and almost come out of COVID. And it does take some hours. It takes 2,000 hours, in fact, to do an MBA. So there you are. You can quantify it.
All right. I have to check. I have to get on my calculator and see how many of those hours I've ticked off already. But Jonathan, yeah, we're not here to talk about my MBA or my long nights of reading and doing assignments and all those things. Actually, the reason I got you on was you did a very interesting talk, and that's why I also know about this, that Henley Africa has been doing some very interesting things in the background in terms of upgrading your campus and kind of adapting to this new normal that we're all talking about, not only digitally, but also physically. Take us through some of the stuff you've been up to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's, well, I think some people became bits of slightly COVID nerds, didn't they? They started studying and reading and everything. So it became fairly clear to us that vaccinations are really important. And then at masking, you could work out the right sort of masks. But then, and then it became very clear that this was airborne. It was a vascular disease that's mainly airborne. So your big risk is the air you breathe, like it or not. And so we thought, well, how do we make it possible to come back to a campus? And with the waves coming to and fro, and who knows what will happen with COVID, make it possible to have a safest possible environment. We're also, like many places in Joburg, fairly near a highway and subject to industrial and other pollution. So we thought, well, let's really focus on the air quality. See if we could, as a test to ourselves, make it the safest study place in Africa from the point of view of air. I mean, that's a crazy ambition, but you have to start. So this is exactly what we've done. We've gone through a lot of study. We've done some analysis. We have a solution.
It's not a cheap exercise. So it's quite a commitment from your side to have to go this route. And it's possibly something that has always been lurking in the background in terms of, well, we should worry about our air quality. But right up till now, I think we've only gotten as far as filtering our water. Now we're talking about filtering air, and I'm assuming it's also not just because of COVID-19. I mean, I think you're also thinking ahead as to what could be the next thing that could potentially become a problem down the line.
No, as a kid, I remember reading Blake and these stories of the dark satanic mills and of the cotton mills in North England that created the smog. And it was like a fantasy to me until I drove through Sasselburg the other day. And I just saw these people living in this kind of green mess, and you could feel it affecting your lungs as you went through. I know, as an ex-pilot, when you take off, you see that these big power stations leave a plume of very high-level cloud all the way to Durban, just about, all across the Highveld, well, not quite to Durban. You see it there. So we have these prevailing winds that come in that direction. But we have a high degree of pollution in South Africa, particularly in winter, of course, when you don't have the rain sourced out of the air. And it turns out there's three things you really need to worry about when it comes to it. Can I be a bit nerdy for a second?
Absolutely. Mind? Take us through it.
Right. Well, you have dirty air, and then you have toxic air, and then you have sick air. Now, dirty air, you filter it out. It's the particulates, it's dust, it's pollen, it's tiny little things that are floating in the air. And these are things that people get allergic to, or you go into mind, or little bits of plastic or brake dust, which is a big pollutant, as is tire dust. People don't realize that all these cars churning around the highway, and when you've got busy highways here, they're shedding dust. Now, this is a big thing internationally. So you've got to get rid of them, the dirtier. Then you've got toxic air, which is like chemicals that damage you, and that's volatile organic compound from diesel fume, for example, gases, smoke, fumes. There's lots of those, the factories pumping it out and all the traffic. And that needs another sort of, you have to neutralize those in a different way. And then finally you've got sick air, which is viruses, bacteria, fungi and all that. And you have to get that out there. Now, mostly people say, oh, let's put on a filter. And they get a HEPA filter into a little, buy a little unit. I've got one right by me that's got a HEPA filter in it. So that's great. But it takes some stuff out, but it doesn't take out the benzenes. So we've bought 74 very high-end air purifiers from Korea, which we shipped over, and we're getting more. And there's none like this in the country. And we've got these things, and they have layers of filters. You first suck it in the bottom, and it goes through a pre-filter to get the worst of it out. And then you go to a sort of loose activated carbon filter, which takes out all of the VOCs from that sort of toxic air. And then you go through a HEPA filter, which takes most of it out. And then it goes through an ultraviolet germicidal irradiation chamber, where UVC fries any bacteria and viruses. And then it goes through a photocatalytic oxidization chamber, which accelerates the air through the less tubes and centrifugally throws the viruses to the edge where they fry. Then another UVC chamber, then another photocatalytic oxidization, and then finally a carbon-infused urethane filter. Now these, like, you could put them in a hospital ward. And we've got them all around campus. So when you come here, what we're going to do, what we're hoping is you're going to be breathing the purest air that you can find in Joburg. And that's our aspiration. And so and it's going to be safe. And of course, at the moment, it's just vaccinated people on campus. We're having masking inside, but not outside. But we really reduce the risk by these filters. And I really do hope more people do it. It's expensive-ish, but not too bad. And you then have to have the processes around it. And our safety committee is largely airline pilots. A lot of the SAA chief pilots and top pilots who were retrenched or laid off early in their careers are brilliant people. And we've assembled some of them. So you should just imagine what our safety manuals are like. So it's a lot of fun going on here.
Well, I mean, if there's anyone to model any sort of progress or a safety features on it, it is the airline industry. And I think it's just one of those benchmarks when it comes to learning from mistakes or improving processes. You just have a look at the way airlines operate and the whole aviation industry operates. And it's just so impressive. But Jonathan, tell us a little bit more about, sort of the decision to go this route. I mean, was there a big demand from some of the big corporates? I know that a lot of your clients come from the blue chip companies listed on the JSE. Was there a demand from them to say, look, we're happy to send some of our staff, some of our team, some of our senior execs, but there has to be a certain level of safety? Or is it one of those dilemmas that business schools have where you actually have to almost practice what you preach and you have to almost lead the way in terms of business?
Well, for us, it's the latter, because it's very easy to say you have vaccination if you come on campus, but never check it. We check. Or say, you if you haven't got a vaccination, you must have a test, and then nobody checks it. So we test everything. So actually, the bizarre thing was, Alex, when we started this, we started talking to all sorts of companies in air purification and ventilation, and they really hadn't explored this. We'd done a lot of research, and we're talking about room air exchange rates and the type of particles. And, who are we? We're a business school, but we knew a heck of a lot more. And we suddenly realized there's a big opportunity here. Somebody who's going to work on clean air and get that into the offices in Sandton, those big high rises, and air conditioning doesn't do the job. In fact, what air conditioning does, it sucks up air from one place, takes it to a central unit, make sure everybody breathes the same air. So if you've got a room with one person in COVID in, it's like a little COVID generator. And after a while, the air gets thicker and thicker and thicker. And unless you change the air or purify it, then the level of risk goes up. And aircons are fantastic. You can guarantee that in some aircon systems, you sit in a room, what everybody else has breathed, you'll breathe within an hour or something. So that's not a very good system. So we said we have to do something different, either suck the air out or purify it. And so we went through a whole load of process. So actually, it's interesting. Very few companies were thinking in this line because very few suppliers were talking about it. We've got to a stage now where there's a really good opportunity to improve the safety of your offices with these sort of solutions, raise people's comfort and confidence levels, show care for people, and show your consciousness for safety, that you can think systemically and not just in little boxes or straight lines.
Well, if you need a breath of fresh air in Greater Sandton, you can go get it at Henley Business School Africa. And Jonathan Foster Pedley, Dean and Director, I really thank you for your time and for sharing some of the interesting developments in terms of fresh and clean air at the business school.
Thank you, and breathe well today.
So that's it for this week. It's another Sandton Times Hour on Mix 93.8 FM, and you can get this show straight afterwards on Apple, on Google, on Spotify podcasts. Subscribe, share, and enjoy some of those interviews once more. If you missed some of the content, you can catch it there again. You can also email editor@sandtontimes.co.za and also connect with us on social media at Sandton Times and visit the website sandtontimes.co.za. Also for the show notes. So if you missed anything during this hour, you can check out the show notes and all the details are up on the website. And it's always good to hear from you, so feel free to reach out and connect with your comments, your feedback, and your input. Thank you to all the guests who made time this week again to be part of the Sandton Times Hour, and also thank you to everyone at the Sandton Times as well as Mix 93.8 FM. Thank you for listening, and let's connect again next week.
That's it for this week. Thanks for listening to the Sandton Times Hour. And if you enjoyed it, be sure to share it.